Knutineering, Part 15. Welcome back to Knutineering, where the possible is made more difficult by boneheaded ignorance, overenthusiasm, and pointy metal things being brought together. You may want to refresh your memory on the project in Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, Part 4, Part 5, Part 6, Part 7, Part 8, Part 9, Part 10, Part 11, Part 12, Part 13, Part 14. Design goals. Fast as possible on off-road, too big to have on roads. I will set a target speed of 50 miles per hour. 4WD. Must be able to reverse and brake. Unbreakable, or as close to. Must be able to mount GoPro or similar camera on it. Cheap as possible. We left the last episode of Knutineering at the cutting of materials, and the waiting for parts. Well, the parts arrived literally just after I had written the previous episode, so there's karma for you. The parts are all in brightly colored ABS plastic and smell a little bit vinyl. Why? They have a stickiness that is quite unpleasant, but it comes off after leaving them out in the sun for an hour and washing in warm soapy water. Just 1 hour in weak spring sunshine, ABS plastic is degraded by sunlight. Just like giant Lego. The thing I am most worried about is the gearboxes, which were about 40 quid in total, so about a tenner per piece. Each gearbox comes in two parts, the top and the bottom, and has some holes pre-made in them to take 6 bolts to pull the halves together. The idea is that the outer part of the bearings are gripped and do not rotate in the housing. Also critical is how far forwards the pinion gear is in relation to the spare gear. There is a little tolerance, but more than a millimeter or so either way and the gears will wear unduly. A little gentle filing of the edges and the gearboxes fit together snugly. Sharp-eyed puffins will see there is a lip that runs around the edges that are to be butted together so that water has a harder time getting in. The holes in the bottom part were tapped with an M3 tap to receive the retaining bolts from the top half of the gearbox. Putting the gears in was a bit of a struggle. I had measured the exact bearing width but not the small puff-outs between the center circle and the outer. This means that the bearing itself is constrained and chafes against the plastic wall, which is bad for the bearing and introduces unnecessary friction in the drivetrain. Red lines show chafe points. A short while of filing, okay. About 2 hours in total, it is fiddly in there, and the two pieces fit snugly together with the gears in place and the bolts tightened. The red lines in the pic above show where I needed to file back to give the bearings free movement. I am bloody glad I did not go for aluminium gearboxes though. At 1800 quid instead of 40 to have them machined, I would be spending a lot longer than 2 hours to file them back and would be fuming. At least with the day glow colors, the bearings would leave a mark behind if or bit still needed filing. They are still quite heavy though, for plastic and a small bit of metal. But precious now, so I assigned a guard dog. No, don't even look at them. The outer edges of an assembled gearbox are straight 90 degrees as they are printed on a flat surface, with all the indented features pointing upwards. It has to be like this as the 3D printer builds from a flat plate upwards, depositing a single hot bead of molten plastic as it goes. These have chapped my soft office worker's hands in quite a beastly fashion. One side effect of all the filling is that the fingerprint on my index finger has been eroded. Not too much of a deal until you realize that phones are unlocked with fingerprints, RSA secure keys that I need to log into work, banking etc. are unlocked with a fingerprint. Onto the new case for the Pi, that has mounting holes and a case for the camera and for the breadboard. First step is to clear down the breadboard of all our project connections and just leave the GPS. I will connect the IR lights, temperature sensor and IR sensors when I have actually coded them into the Raspivid utility that I am going to use to save camera footage with GPS info embedded in the video. This is probably the clearest I have seen the board for a long time. breadboard with just the GPS plugged in. The Pi fitted snugly into the new case, which is in fetching flight data recorder yellow. I thought it'd be easier to find in a field if it became detached from the car at some point. One thing that bothers me is there is very little ventilation to keep the unit cool. The car is going to be in mud and water at some point, so I wanted as much protection from the elements as possible. At this point it occurred to me that my design of piggybacking the breadboard case on the Pi case was sound. If I had some 80mm M3 bolts, which I do not have. Fitting the GPS into the breadboard case, I recall thinking, I need a pad coming from the wall to be able to mount the GPS unit onto it without the bolt going through the case wall. What I did not then think of was that the space taken up by the GPS unit would put it in the way of the breadboard. If I put some short lengths of plastic box conduit in the bottom of the case, at least I get the breadboard elevated above the cables. It will do for now, but the breadboard sits way too high for the lid to go on top. And so, the fail begins. Oh, but wait. Cruel fate and lack of engineering discipline have more treats in store for me. Even if I take out the plastic conduit spacers, the cobbler, blue, green T-shaped thing that plugs into the breadboard, is in the way because I had measured the width of the breadboard, not the cobbler. Measure twice, cut once. I either redesign the Pi breadboard arrangement if there is going to be some very careful hacksawing coming up. Still, I did manage to knut-near them together for now, so at least I have a coherent unit that I can move about. I just need to fit the battery to the power input and see if it still works. The epitome of knut-nearing: cables, tape and fingers crossed. I set my phone to act as a Wi-Fi hotspot, and I have already configured the Pi to connect to that network. House internet switched off just to be sure, and fingers, toes, thumbs and eyes crossed in hope. The Pi has been switched on for a good half hour on battery power for now, so it should have had time to see enough satellites to take readings. I fire up VNC viewer on my phone and run the video capture. Garden table by night. Edited to not self docs. The help file is not particularly helpful on this front, and the annotations don't update unless some output is specified. Weird as hell, but not as strange as having to specify background, foreground colors not only in if color expression instead of RGB values, but some lazy programming means you have to give them as viewy. Now, given that white is UF is hexadecimal 0xFF0000 and black is 0x00000, if you reverse the order then white is 0x00000FF or just 0xFF. Not sure how that improves things so much, but anyway. Some further reading of the code and I end up with a passable command line that is impenetrable unless you have first learned to code and then read the source for the Raspivage utility. For some reason I can have background as any color but the foreground is any shade of white. I am not going to waste any more time trying to get that working. The text is visible and that is largely what I am interested in. The command I run is pretty involved. Raspivid T0A1038 versus GPS XAuto MD6E32,0x152B95,0x808,000 OakNutMobile.H264. Raspivid is a demo application that comes with the Pi that I have modified a bit for my own ends, adding more info to the GPS overlay output. This means I can extend this to include all the other sensor data when I get them working. This tells the video capture to run until stopped, annotate black background with date, time and GPS, video stabilize, enable GPS tracking, use auto exposure, select mode 6 capture which is 1280x720 and offers a frame rate of 4060fps, annotate text font size 32, foreground as VOI, background as VOI, save the video to a file called knutmobile.h264. The H264 is raw video and not really very playable in many players, so I will tart it up using FMPEG later so it can be played on regular players. The command line is a pain in the ass to type on a mobile phone, so I just create a short script to run the above and make it easier to kick off the capture. All of the bits are flopping around each other and the camera keeps falling over, so I spend some very careful time with a hacksaw and metal files. I finally get the devices playing nicely together in one coherent lump. We can rebuild him. For less than $6 million, I hope. This means the unit is now one single block and can be moved about easily. Note that the antenna is ceramic side up, which is the way these things are done apparently. As I retested that everything was working when plugged back in, the unit began overheating, so I think that the concern I had previously was borne out. A conundrum indeed. Use it too long and the Pi will burn out. Cut some ventilation holes and water, mud will short out the circuit. I look at the pile of things too hard to fix right now and wearily toss another onto the mountain. One thing about the battery pack is that it does not quite juice the Pi as much as it would like, and I get a low voltage warning on screen when running mobile. That said, I don't seem to be getting temperature warnings either. Not sure if this is because when mobile there is no monitor to drive or if the lower voltage is helping in this regard, but hey, it is a win, so I am taking it. The battery seems to last about an hour from full charge, which should be plenty for recording my failures when the Knutmobile is up and running. I need to get some 3mm stud rods to properly fit the units together, but I can wait, again, for them to arrive, as I still need to plug the RPM counter components and temperature sensor into the breadboard. Oh, and get them working alongside the GPS. I need to test the range of the VNC connection when out and about. In my postage stamp size garden, I can wander to the furthest reach with the Pi in the opposite corner and still get a signal. This will be useful info to have. So if you were in a Marks and Sparks car park watching a worried looking middle aged bloke looking at a suspicious yellow box on his car and his phone the other day, that was me. Range is about 70 paces, so I would guess in the region of 50 meters or so. That is going to be most excellent. At the minute, the main worries I have about the car's efficacy are the polycarbonate gearbox shell being too weak, the gear change mechanism, and how good at driving it I will need to be to change gear without shearing the gears and hubs into an expensive mess, and whether the chassis will buckle if I go over broken ground. Crash damage and repair is also an issue. As I decide how everything is put together, I do not want to have to remake the entire chassis from scratch just to fix a single broken element. I am not sure if the 6mm shafts the gearbox is built on are going to be strong enough. Maintenance should be relatively easy. Once built, then the front and rear diffs won't need greasing too often. The main gearbox is open to the elements, just waiting for a small piece of gravel to get caught between the gears and smash everything up. And the servos and radio gear should be easy to get at. These things are but parts of the many, many problems and worries that sit on either the too hard to fix right now and I'll fix it when it breaks piles. But the big worry is going to be getting the gear change right. If I can get it smooth, then it will hopefully not stress the gearbox components too much. Now, the drivetrain comes from the engine via a centrifugal clutch. Until the RPM of the engine hits a certain point, the pinion gear from the engine is free to turn but is not driven by the engine. So much the same as driving a car with a broken clutch cable, and no synchro mesh, but we'll ignore that for now. I just need to be driving along in first gear, completely ease off the throttle so the centrifugal clutch disengages, and then change gear. The motion of the wheels will keep the gears turning, and the servo will elongate the spring that is pulling the gear changer along the guide. So the gear interlock will press up onto the drive interlock under pressure of the spring, with the servo straining at full travel to keep it there. Once the interlock is engaged, the spring will return to normal size and the load is off the gear change servo. I can then open the throttle up again. Not exactly a F1 style high-speed gear change, but then again I don't have a team of top engineers and a multi-million pound budget. On the plus side, I only kneel to find bolts I have dropped on the floor. Going down from second gear to first gear is going to be interesting though, as the car will be going much faster. All in all, I need to be able to see what is going on with the gear changer, and this is why the range of the Pi is useful. I can see what is happening in real time. Perhaps I could look into getting a boosted Wi-Fi network card on the car and one for my phone or a laptop to increase the range. At the very least, the footage is stored on the Pi for later viewing, but you can't beat a real-time feed. This is also why the RPM counters are quite important too. I should probably add a gear mode sensor in there too, I suppose, so the gear state, first, neutral, second, is recorded as well. I have no idea if the RX, TX will interfere with the Wi-Fi though, but at least I can start the capture and view it later. For now, I enlisted the aid of a sulky preteen and my car. She operated the Pi while I drove. There is no sound either, so perhaps I should look into that as well, to hear the sound of pistons ramming through the engine block or the chassis disintegrating. Video player. 0 o'clock. 0:02. Martian-style sky is due to the camera being an IR camera. I am some distance from my house, so the latitude and longitude are not blanked. I was very careful to drive at exactly the 20 miles per hour speed limit. Thanks, Khan and Boris, you are to bell ends, by the speedo, and apart from a jitter of about 5 kilometers per hour, the speed seems to be reasonable accurate. Obviously, I will change the code to include the time only once. If altitude is important, then there's probably a very bad crash about to happen, and I have no idea what track is. The important thing is that the Pi is bundled into something that can be strapped to the Knut mobile, and the telemetry is working as I designed it. This is a pretty big milestone in the project so far. Still waiting for Greece, ordered 3, received 1. The other 2 are hopefully on the way, but you never know. Still left to do, think about. Cut down hex tube rider to the correct, smaller size. Rebuild the gearbox, again, but with lock nuts and thread lock. Go through the rear end design again so that the shocks and rear suspension arms are properly sighted. This means I can finally attach the engine to the chassis. Sort out the car underside, at the minute it is just a gaping void. Endpoint adjustment for servos and control mechanisms. Dumbo RC setup. www.youtube.com web link. Petrol tank and center of gravity. Sighting of brakes. Sighting of RPM counters. Build and install gear change mechanism into something better than the POC that is the right now. Pics, vids, words and music. Copyright Elk Neutered or 2021. The Goodnight Vienna audio file.